Time for our weekly look at the top stories in national politics. President Trump continues to threaten new tariffs on Mexican imports unless the country does more to stem immigration into the U.S. The White House is ordering former aides to defy congressional subpoenas. And presidential candidates Joe Biden and Elizabeth Warren both rolled out proposals this week aimed at fighting climate change, joining other candidates in the field. Our question for you this week, does it matter to you whether a presidential candidate has a plan to address climate change? If so, what do you want to see in those plans? Are there concerns you have about the country, your area, maybe your line of work, and how it might be affected by climate change? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Lauren Gambino is a political correspondent for The Guardian. Lauren, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Let's start with this idea of tariffs on all imports from Mexico starting at 5%, working their way up. That'd start in about a week. The goal to pressure the country to limit immigration to the U.S. Here's a listen to what the president had to say.
Mexico shouldn't allow millions of people to try and enter our country, and they could stop it very quickly. And I think they will. And if they won't, we're going to put tariffs on. And every month, those tariffs go from 5% to 10% to 15% to 20 and then to 25%. And what will happen then is all of those companies that have left our country and gone to Mexico are going to be coming back to us. And that's okay.
Do we have an indication of the actual benchmarks President Trump would use to remove these tariffs?
Well, he says he's very serious about the tariffs, first and foremost, but he said that he would not impose them if Mexico would stop allowing Central American immigrants to cross the border from Mexico into from Guatemala into Mexico and then, you know, make their way up to the U.S. border. So he really wants Mexico to, you know, get much more serious in his words and his view about immigration. He also wants them to keep asylum seekers trying to enter the U.S. on their side of the border. But it does remain unclear exactly, you know, what those numbers would look like, if it's even feasible for Mexico to accomplish this in the timeline. He's, you know, threatening tariffs next week. So could they, you know, feasibly get this into place fast enough? So there's a lot of question marks about it. And it really isn't clear exactly what those benchmarks are.
What have we heard from leadership in Mexico itself?
So Mexico is actually, they seem to be taking a deep breath. They've obviously been dealing with this administration on issues of immigration now for a long time. Well, this is a new government in Mexico, a relatively new government, but, you know, Mexico is now kind of used to Trump threatening to build a wall on the border. You know, they're sort of used to this, the threats. So it does seem like they're taking a very measured approach. They obviously do not want these tariffs to be put into place. And so it looks like they're going to try to strike an agreement. We have top leaders from the U.S. and Mexico, you know, discussing the issue today and this week. And those talks are expected to continue in earnest to try to avoid this.
Some top Republicans have been responding to this tariff threat. Here's a listen to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell on the issue.
I think I can safely say most of us hope that this Mexican delegation that's come up here and discuss the challenges at the border and what the Mexicans might be able to do to help us more than they have will be fruitful, and that these tariffs will not kick in.
And there's been more angry response from other Republicans, not quite so measured there. What have we seen from in the range of Republican congressional reaction?
So they have a lunch meeting every Tuesday, and they came out of that meeting yesterday just fuming. None of them want this. This is, you know, very contrary to, traditional Republican values. It is pretty remarkable because most Republicans are with the president on immigration. They want stricter immigration controls, and they want, you know, more security at the border. But he has found the one way to really drive a wedge wedge on the issue of immigration, and that's by bringing tariffs into this. So yeah, most Republicans, especially in the Senate, are very opposed to this idea. There are some, you know, who are trying to sort of find a way, you know, who say he has the right to do this, but, you know, they don't totally agree with it. But I think the prevailing opinion is that this is a very bad idea. It, you know, risks undermining a separate trade negotiations that they are, you know, have renegotiating NAFTA with Mexico and Canada. And it also, you know, risks hurting the economy, which is what Republicans and Donald Trump plan to run on in 2020.
We're talking to Lauren Gambino from The Guardian, looking at some of the top stories in national politics. The White House is instructing two former presidential aides, Annie Donaldson and Hope Hicks, to defy subpoenas from the House Judiciary Committee. What are lawmakers looking for in these subpoenas?
So Democrats really want to hear more from them about, you know, specifically what they witnessed in relation to possible obstruction of justice. They want, I mean, these, especially in the case of Hope Hicks, you know, she's someone who was really just a constant presence by the president's side for as long as she worked in the White House, and obviously prior to that on his campaign. So she was very close to the president. She, you know, saw and worked with him in a very close capacity. So they believe that she would offer insight and perhaps more clarity on these issues that Robert Mueller outlined in his report relating to obstruction of justice. And, you know, part of it is also just getting these White House and former White House officials before their committee on television so that you've got this, you know, what Republicans call a spectacle, but you've got them talking on TV about these instances of obstruction of justice, because Democrats realize most Americans haven't read the full Mueller report, and this would be a very compelling way to sort of lead the public through that report.
And this also happened, something similar happened with former White House lawyer Don McGahn. Are you expecting to see a lot more of this? Democrats in the House want to talk to someone. The White House says no, and we have these standoffs now that we're in a post-Mueller investigation world.
Absolutely. Trump and the White House have vowed to deny all subpoenas from, you know, the Democratic-controlled House. They want to put this behind them, and their strategy is to, you know, to use obstruct. They really do not want Democrats poking around and drawing this out. They believe, you know, the spectacle of having these nationally televised hearings would draw comparisons perhaps to Watergate, and, you know, this could lead perhaps sway more Americans towards the idea of impeachment, you know, if they go poorly for Trump and his officials and former officials. So, you know, I mean, so far this is their strategy. It's Democrats have threatened to take some of these defiances to court. Obviously, in the case of, you know, William Barr, they're threatening the attorney general. They're threatening to hold him in contempt of court. In contempt of Congress. And so, you know, it's kind of now Democrats' choice how they really handle this and how, you know, how far they're willing to escalate this showdown.
And you mentioned impeachment. Speaker Nancy Pelosi is saying the president is engaged in a cover-up, but isn't herself calling for impeachment proceedings. Different opinions on among Democrats whether they want to start proceedings, have an impeachment inquiry, continue with committee investigations. What are you seeing? What's the latest on that range of options?
Yeah, so I think you're starting to see, you're definitely seeing more presidential candidates come out in favor of impeachment. We saw several more candidates, lesser high profile than, you know, Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris. But yeah, we're seeing other candidates now come out in favor of impeachment. You're seeing more and more House members come around to the idea. And you're seeing some, some Democrats say, if we, our window for convincing people that we should be doing this is kind of closing. You know, if we wait and drag this out and we act like we really don't want to do this, but somehow get pushed into doing it, that doesn't look good for us. We need to be confident. We need to, you know, believe in the reasons for doing this. And we need to probably do that very quickly. So I think you're starting to see a tide turning among Nancy Pelosi's caucus, but she believes this is just very bad politics, especially going into an election year. She thinks it will only help Trump. And she's worried about, you know, her majority. She does not want to lose moderate members of the House because they decided to go for impeachment and ultimately, you know, believing that the Senate probably won't vote to convict the president. So what is it all for is sort of her case.
We're talking to Lauren Gambino, political correspondent for The Guardian, about some of the week's top political news. Coming up, we'll talk about climate change and the 2020 presidential race, and you can get in on the conversation now. What do you think about climate change as a campaign issue? Is it important to you that a candidate has a plan to address climate change? What would you want to see in that kind of plan? Or do you have worries about a big green energy initiative, as some of the candidates are talking about? Call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation now with Lauren Gambino, political correspondent at The Guardian, looking at this week's news out of Washington. Well, let's turn to the presidential campaign, Lauren. Two Democratic candidates recently released proposals aimed at combating climate change. A couple of the big names here, former Vice President Joe Biden, Senator Elizabeth Warren. They're not the first to talk about climate change. What are we seeing in their plans?
They have both introduced these sweeping climate plans. They want to have the federal government heavily invest in combating climate change. They want to see much more investment in green energy. There's a much bigger focus on, Joe Biden's plan wants to eliminate the nation's net carbon emissions by 2050. And Elizabeth Warren's plan, she wants to create a National Institute of Clean Energy. So I think you're seeing very big and very bold proposals. And it's worth noting that these are two candidates who traditionally might fall on sort of separate sides of the Democratic ideology scale, if you will. But yet on climate change, their proposals are actually kind of in line with one another. Joe Biden was actually criticized just a few weeks ago by some very high-profile left liberal progressives. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez called him out and said, you know, this is not a time for middle-of-the-road politics. This is a major issue. And, you know, just weeks later, we see this climate plan from Joe Biden, and some progressives are taking a victory lap, saying we really pushed him on this issue because it is bold, and you are seeing progressive climate activists very supportive of it.
I want to bring on a caller now. Mike is with us in Madison. Mike, hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me on. I don't think people realize that the growth in population of two countries, India and China, are driving a lot of this. You could take the entire state of Wisconsin, every person, every business, put it on a planet or on a spaceship in outer space, and it wouldn't make a dent in our global warming of the Earth because of simply the population growth. We could be on that spaceship for 30 years, and the continued population growth will overcome any of the savings of us, of our use. We don't talk about it. Nobody cuts back on, the number of baseball games, the Indy 500, there's still 500 laps. We've got such a huge problem that the United States trying to go this alone it's not going to make any difference. Russia would love to have the Earth heat up because it would open up drilling in the Arctic for them, so they're not going to sign on for anything.
So, Mike, just briefly before I let you go, do you want to see a climate plan from candidates because it won't make a difference?
No.
Am I hearing you right?
No, it won't make a difference unless we're going to go nuclear. Somebody like Ortez, who's a bartender trying to talk about global warming and thinking that we're going to solve it. It's like the candidate in Madison that ran for Alder. He wanted to paint all the streets in Madison white
Mike, thanks a lot for calling in. Lauren, not on board with a lot of what many Democratic primary voters are looking for here.
That's true. We are seeing incredible polling that shows Democrats that this is suddenly a top-tier issue. Really, in past elections, that has not been the case. But for Democrats, they are really looking at climate change as an issue, and they're expecting their candidates to come out with these big proposals. But, you know, to the caller's point, I think that was one of the big controversies over Donald Trump pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement that was meant to be this big global agreement. And, you know, the idea was if the U.S. is not at the table, then that might allow other countries, China notably, to also, you know, not agree to any terms. And, you know, it takes the pressure, the U.S. maybe as a global leader or a leader on the international stage. It, them not being at the table does sort of, well, other countries might start to say, well, why should we, you know, meet these big climate goals if the U.S. is not at the table. So I think there might be a significant there is a role for the U.S. to play, even though obviously population wise these countries are much bigger than us. But we certainly do have a role to play, I think, is the argument that many Democratic candidates would make.
And a lot of people point toward the per capita energy use in the U.S. as well.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
Thanks a lot for the call, Mike, at 800-642-1234. And in the politics of this, we see at least one Democratic candidate, Washington Governor Jay Inslee, saying, I'm not just talking about climate change. I'm making climate change my number one issue. Lauren.
Yes, sorry. I thought you might play a clip. Yes, no, it's incredible. We've never seen a candidate run solely on climate change. He is approaching every issue, national security, even in foreign policy. He wants to be driven by a climate policy interest. So, you know, that would include, again, some of what the caller was bringing up, this idea of everyone needs to be at the table. And, you know, we have, I guess it's from the point of view, this is a real crisis. All the experts are telling us, you know, we have so many years left to figure this out. So this needs to be our first priority. And it needs to be the sort of lens through which we approach every decision that, you know, that a president would have to make. Jay Inslee is, I think he's impressing a lot of climate activists with his plan. I don't know how broadly he's winning over the Democratic base. He's still not doing incredibly well in polling, but, you know, we do have the debates coming up, so a lot could change there. And who knows, if this is truly the issue of this presidential primary, maybe that helps him take off or distinguishes him at least. And, you know, maybe worst case, he is able to sort of influence the debate with some of his ideas.
Talking to Lauren Gambino from The Guardian, looking at some of the top stories in national politics. We'll bring on another caller now. Rachel is with us in Fort Atkinson. Rachel, hi.
Hi. I'd like to see more presidential candidates talk about egg and the industry surrounding it, especially since we are from the Midwest and Wisconsin, the dairy land. I just wish we could focus in on our good old hometown stuff instead. I do appreciate the big aspects like climate change and stuff, but really focusing on egg industries.
Rachel, thanks for the call. And with Iowa early in voting, Lauren, we often see candidates talk about issues of interest in the agricultural community, right?
Yeah, I'm sure we'll hear a lot more about that in Iowa. And then obviously with Wisconsin being such a pivotal player because of what happened in 2016, maybe you'll hear a lot more of that and you'll hear a lot more candidates coming to Wisconsin much earlier, I would imagine.
Rachel, thanks for the call. Lauren, before we run out of time, I want to turn to this disaster relief plan passed now by the U.S. House, a $19 billion disaster aid package heading to the president for a signature. This had a rocky road. Can you talk about the path that got us here a little bit?
It has been a long time coming. Some of these disasters happened months and months ago. So there was basically a dispute with Trump and Congress over what should be in the bill. I mean, it's a massive aid bill, $19 billion. So Trump really was resistant to the idea of adding extra aid for Puerto Rico. He's obviously had some high-profile clashes with the leaders, some government leaders from the island, and so this was something that really bothered him. Eventually, more recently, he was able to get on board, but while while members of Congress were on, while they were away over the Easter holiday, they thought that they would sort of be able to sail a piece of legislation through, and a couple Republicans single-handedly were able to block that bill. So they kind of had to wait until everyone was back in order to pass this week. So we are finally there. We've got now we finally have a bill that will reimburse these states and Puerto Rico for, you know, hurricanes, tornadoes, flooding, wildfires. I mean, so much has happened, and the devastation, obviously, with each of these crises kind of gets worse by the year. So the longer they took, the more they were having to cover, actually. So it ended up backfiring by drawing it out this long.
And we'll leave it there. Lauren, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Lauren Gambino, a political correspondent for The Guardian. She was with us for our weekly look at the ongoing stories in national politics. We still want to hear from you, though. We talked a little bit about global warming in the presidential campaign, heard a little bit about agriculture there, too. What we want to hear from you as campaign 2020 rolls on here in 2019, what do you want to hear candidates talking about? What do you want to hear their plans on? Is there an issue that stands out above all others that motivates you to vote, to donate to a candidate, to support them, to share them on social media? You can use all the ways to share your thoughts with us. You can email ideas@WPR.org. You can tweet us @CentralTimeWPR. Love to hear from you there. You can also send a message via the Ideas Network Facebook page. We want to hear from you, and we'll probably do a call-in on this before too much longer. What topic is the most important to you in the presidential race? Is it something like climate change? Is it trade and tariffs? Is it something closer to home like agriculture? What do you want the media to hold the candidates' feet to the fire on? Let us know which issues you are watching in presidential race 2020. Again, email ideas@WPR.org or tweet us @CentralTimeWPR or head over to Facebook, the Ideas Network Facebook page, and let us know what you think.